It's good to be with you this morning. A lot of us are fighting little colds. I guess it's just the time of year that it seems like we do all come down with little head colds from time to time. This morning, we're going to be continuing our study we started last week, talking about the providence of God. Now, last week, we looked at the providence of God in the life of Paul. This morning, we're going to look at the providence of God in the life of Joseph. Now, Joseph is a story that most of us know and remember. As a young man, only 17, his brothers sell him into slavery down into Egypt. But he rises to prominence. He interprets Pharaoh's dream and becomes governor or second in command of all of Egypt to Pharaoh himself. And in a time of famine, then the children of Israel, Jacob's family ends up going down into Egypt. So we'll be looking at the providence of God in the life of Joseph. Now, when we talk about the providence of God or divine providence, what we're talking about is God's hand, the way that God sustains all the universe, the way that God watches over all the universe and enables His will to be done throughout the world. We looked at that last week in the life of Paul. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, we see it in our own lives. And this we're seeing maybe more today than we did last week. Philippians 2:12, Paul writes for us, "My dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and act according to His good purposes." And the purposes of God will be done. And as long as we work with the Lord and are in harmony with His will, then His providence will be done in our lives as well. Where you looked last week, the idea of the providence of God is maybe not quite the way we see it sometimes. God is not a fix-it God. Things may not work out quite as easy as we might think that they should. In Romans 8:18, you remember Paul says to us, "Our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us." In other words, all the things that happen in this world, even though the good and the bad, and sometimes the bad seems awfully bad, Paul says that doesn't even compare with the glory that we will have in heaven. There's another aspect of the providence of God that sometimes we miss as well. Sometimes we want to say, well, everything happened according to God's will. But that's really not true on this earth. Satan is still active, and the Lord allows Satan quite a bit of leeway. And Paul refers to Satan as the prince of this world. We'll be looking at that more as the weeks to come when we look at the providence of God. Now, on the other side of the coin, so to speak, that people look at today, and you hear this quite a bit, instead of the providence of God, you hear the idea of naturalism. Naturalism is the idea that everything that happens, everything that has happened, has a natural, there's a natural explanation for it. And now we see this a lot in the science today, and that leads in even into materialism, which is the idea that this material universe is all that there is. There is anything more. There is no spiritual realm, so to speak. But as we go through the scriptures, and I think if you look at the evidences put in front of you by God as Himself, as you look at His creation, you see that it's a very rational belief that there is a God. And that this God does sustain the universe. And this God is active. He's a personal God. He's not a God of afar that just started everything and then let the natural laws. He's a God of providence. He's a God that's active in our lives. And we'll see that today as we take a look at the life of Joseph. About a week or so ago, I read an article about Joseph's life by McGarvey. Some of you might be familiar with him. He wrote many of the Gospel Advocate's commentaries many years ago. And he poses two questions, and I'd like for us to consider these questions as we look at Joseph's life. Many of us know that Joseph was sold into slavery and into Egypt, and he comes to prominence. What you may not have thought about, when he comes to prominence, when he becomes governor over all of Egypt, they have 7 years of plenty. And then they have 7 years of famine. Well, during those 7 years of plenty, Joseph could do whatever he wanted to do. He never goes back home. He never even sends a messenger back home. Why does Joseph not go back home during those years that he could have? He had many years before his brothers come to visit him in Egypt that he could have sent. It wasn't that far. If you look at a map, it's maybe 150, 200 miles from Egypt back up there to the land of Canaan. But Joseph never sends anybody back home to tell them he's still alive or that he's now governor all of Egypt. He doesn't even go himself. Why? The other question I'd like for you to think about, we know Joseph's 10 brothers sell him into slavery into Egypt. These 10 men, I mean, can you think of anything being more cruel than that, to sell your own brother into slavery? In fact, in one place it says Joseph begged for his very life to his brothers, and yet they sell him into slavery. These men, as cruel and as heartless as we may think of them, and they were at the beginning of the story today, they become the very leaders of Israel. Israel will be divided up into 12 tribes, and 10 of them will be led by these men. These men that sell their own brother into slavery will end up being the leaders of God's nation. Have you ever thought about why God chose these 10 men to lead his people? We'll look at that as we go through. The story of Joseph really begins in chapter 15 of Genesis, many years before Joseph is even born. In chapter 15 of Genesis, God goes to Abraham and he repeats the covenant he makes to him. The first time is back in chapter 12, where he calls him out of a foreign land and says, "Go to the land I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will make your descendants so numerous that if you could count the sand on the seashore, you could count your descendants." In chapter 15 of Genesis, we're about 10 years later. And God comes and he repeats that covenant to Abraham. And Abraham says, "God, how can I know this is going to happen? You tell me my descendants are going to be a great nation. I don't even have a descendant. I don't have a single son. How is this going to happen, God?" And God repeats to him that it will happen. And look at chapter 15 down to verse 13. "Then the Lord said to him, 'Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated for 400 years. But I will punish that nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure.'" Now, if you go through the story, of course, we know how it all happens. But if you read that, you say, well, how did it come about that Abraham's descendants would end up down there in Egypt? How did that come about? Well, we know the story that there was a great famine in the land. And so they send some of the people down to Egypt to buy some grain. And when they're there, they find out Joseph, their own brother, has become governor over all of Egypt. And so the whole family comes down into Egypt. Have you ever thought about all the processes that went for Joseph to be at that position at that time? How did he become governor over all of Egypt? Well, if you know the story, you know that Pharaoh had a dream. Pharaoh had a dream that there were these seven great big old fat cows sitting there eating on the side of the river. And then these teeny little skinny cows come up and they eat them up. And Pharaoh said, you know, what does that mean? He has another dream very similar with stalks of corn. Then seven great big stalks and then seven little tea stalks eat up the great big stalks. And so Pharaoh has this dream and he calls all his wise men in and they don't know what it means. But then his cupbearer, cupbearer is sort of his right-hand man, he says, you know, back a couple years ago you threw me into prison for a while and when I was there I had a dream and there's this guy in prison, he probably could tell you what your dream means. And so, of course, that guy was Joseph. And he brings Joseph out and he cleans him up because he's been there in prison. And he tells him his dream. And Joseph tells him that God can tell you what your dream means. Your dream means that there's going to be 7 good years where you're going to have plenty. And everything's going to be just rolling and everything's going to be good. But after those 7 years of plenty, there's going to be 7 years of famine. And those 7 years of famine are going to be so severe that you're going to even forget about those 7 years of plenty. And then Joseph says, you know, if you're smart, Pharaoh, what you need to do is appoint somebody to gather up all the grain during those good years so that you'll be prepared for the bad years. And Pharaoh says, that sounds like a good plan. I need somebody that God's with. And it sounds like God's with you, Joseph. Why don't you become that man? And so Joseph becomes governor over all of Egypt. But if you look at the story, you know, it's very key that the cupbearer was there. How did the cupbearer happen to know about Joseph? Where, if you go through the story, you know, a few years back, the cupbearer was thrown into prison. And not just any prison, but the prison that was there in the palace, that the captain of the guard was head of that prison. And in that prison happened to be Joseph. And so when the cupbearer has his dream, and also the chief baker has a dream, they don't know what they mean, and they tell them to Joseph, who happens to be a trustee in charge of that whole set of the prison. And so when Joseph hears the dreams, he tells them what they mean. And he tells the baker that it's not going to be too good for you. You're going to be hung in 3 days. But the cupbearer, you're going to get to go back and be back with Pharaoh. And he says, when you get back with Pharaoh, remember me. But the cupbearer doesn't remember him, does he? He forgets him. And for 2 more years, Joseph sits in prison. But you ever think about how Joseph got to be in that prison, in the right spot to meet the cupbearer? He was there because he had been sold into slavery into Potiphar's house. Now, if you go through the story, Potiphar wasn't just any guy. He was an official. He was actually captain of the king's guard and actually head of that prison. And when Joseph is in, becomes a slave to Potiphar, God's with him, and Joseph goes up to prominence, but actually becomes steward of all Potiphar's household. But Potiphar's wife has other ideas, and she tries to entice Joseph into actually coming to bed with her. And Joseph will have nothing to do with it. So Potiphar's wife then falsely accuses him. When Potiphar comes home and his wife accuses Joseph, it says Potiphar's anger burned against Joseph, and so he threw him into prison. Now, he could have put Joseph to death, if you think about him being a slave and things Joseph was accused of, but he doesn't put him to death. He puts him to prison, and it's going to be the same prison, of course, that the cupbearer is to be. So you see all these things work out all the way through Joseph's life. Not an easy life. In fact, from the time that Joseph sold into slavery, he was 17, to the time he becomes governor of Egypt, he's 30. 13 years go by. Many of them, Joseph is in prison during that time. So even though the hands of God's with him, it doesn't mean it's always going to be easy. But you see that it works out just the way that God wanted it to. Now, I want you to think with me about the first question we asked when we started our lesson today. Why do you think Joseph, when he had the opportunity, didn't send back home? Well, if you look over to Genesis chapter 37, we see the beginning of the story. This is an amazing story if you read through Genesis. There's actually over 10 chapters given to this story in the Bible. I don't know of any other story in the Old Testament as long as the story of Joseph, except maybe the story of Abraham himself. This is a long story, and there's much detail given. But in chapter 37, the story begins, Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he had made him a richly ornamented robe, called that usually the coat of many colors. And if you go on down, you find his brothers hated him. Now, the whole story, if you remember, Jacob had 2 wives, Leah and Rachel. And Rachel he loved more than he did Leah. But Rachel had no sons till very late in her life, or actually late in Joseph's life, too. And so even though he has 12 sons, the youngest 2 were born to Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin, and Rachel actually dies when Benjamin's born. And so there's a lot of favoritism in this family of 12 sons, and Jacob shows favoritism to Joseph, and because of that, his older brothers hated him, it says. And Joseph goes on, and he kind of adds fuel to the fire. He has these dreams, and he tells them, there's going to be a time when you're going to bow down to me. Well, that doesn't help his relationship with his brothers anymore, so they hate him even more. But look over to verse 12 in our story. In verse 12, it says, now the brothers had gone to gaze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are gazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, and I am going to send you to them. Now, if you look at a map in Canaan where he is, this is about 50 to 70 miles away. A lot of times we look at Joseph where he's just sent out to see his brothers. But this is a long way away. Now, at that time, they rode around on donkeys. And I don't know how long it would take to go 50, 60, 70 miles. But it's probably 3 or 4 day journey. Here's a 17-year-old boy sent for a 3 or 4 day journey to visit, to see his brothers. And he starts this journey. He gets to where he's supposed to be, and he can't find his brothers. And this guy happens to be there. He says, well, your brothers have gone on down to Dothan. Well, Dothan's another 10 miles on down the road, so it's another day journey. Ever gone someplace and get lost? And you run around, you travel, and you take one more turn. You say, well, if I take one more turn, And you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes you're lost, maybe longer than that sometimes if you don't want to stop and ask somebody. But finally you see the road. Oh, I'm back on the road I'm supposed to be on. You know how you feel? You feel good when you finally get back on the road you're supposed to be on. That's probably the way Joseph felt. He'd been traveling around for days and not finding his brothers, and finally he sees them and he goes to them. And he must have been in a pretty good mood. You know, finally I found my brothers. But when he gets there, his brothers don't receive him too well, do they? They immediately bound him up, they tear off his coat, they throw him down in a pit, and they tell him they're going to kill him. And they tell him that, and he begs for his own life. And of course, they end up not killing him. Judah talks him into, let's just sell him as a slave. And so they sell him to a slave into Egypt. And he goes into Egypt, and we know the story once he's there. But now look over with me to chapter 41. In chapter 41, Joseph has become governor of all of Egypt. And listen what it says in verse 50. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh, and he said, now listen to what he says, "It's because God has made me forget all the troubles of all my father's household." Can you imagine living your life such that you can thank God, "God, you've helped me forget where I came from. My household, you've helped me forget that they even exist." Can you imagine that? That's where Joseph was. He was thanking God that he could forget all about those people back there. When he was sold into slavery, you must have felt like, you know, when Dad hears about this, he's going to come down and get me. But of course, his father didn't know about it. He thought he was dead. And so for years, he sat down there in prison. For years, he wondered, what's going on? And so now he could pray to God and say, "God, thank you for helping me forget my people back home even exist." And that's where Joseph was at this time. And if you look at what he names Ephraim, it's very similar. The second son he named Ephraim, and he said, "It's because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." And so this is Joseph's frame of mind, and we know what happens next. There is a great famine. And during the famine up in Canaan, where his brothers are, they run out of food. And so Jacob sends his 10 oldest sons, all 10 of them, go down to Egypt to try to buy food from the Egyptians. And when they get down there, of course, Joseph recognizes them. Can you imagine what he must have felt when he saw his 10 brothers? These were the guys that sold him into slavery. These were the guys that wanted to kill him. And he sees them, and he accuses them of being spies. He says, "You guys are just coming down here as spies." And so they tell him, "Oh, no, we're not spies. Our father's back there, and there actually were 12 brothers, and one of them's no more, and one of them's still up there with Dad." And so Joseph throws him into prison for 3 days. And then he calls him out of prison, and he says, "Okay, I'm not going to make you stay in prison, but you must give up one of you. You must be a hostage." And it's interesting, he chooses Simeon to be that hostage. If you go through the story, you find out that Reuben really tried to save Joseph, but was unable to. Reuben's the oldest brother. And you would think he would have control of the other brothers. Simeon's the next one, and evidently Simeon must have been the leader of the gang here. Because Joseph then put Simeon in prison, and basically, okay, he's going to be your hostage until you prove that you're not spies. And so he sends them back home. And on the way home, something interesting happens too. If you look over to chapter 42, in chapter 42 and verse 27, when they're on their way home, it says, "At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened their sacks to feed the donkey. And he saw that the silver in the mouth of his sack," now the silver is what they had paid for all the grain that they had received. "He says, 'My silver's been returned,' he said. 'Here it is in my sack.' And their hearts sank as they turned to each other trembling and said, 'What is this God has done to us?'" See, they find out they've gotten their silver back, so now they wonder, how can we ever come back? People are going to think we're spies and that we stole our silver, and now we're going back home. And so he said their hearts sank. And they get back home and they tell Jacob what's happened. And Jacob said, "This is a terrible day. I mean, Joseph is dead, now Simeon is no more." He figures he's never going to see Simeon again. But in chapter 43, you find out the famine stays, and after a while, we don't know how long, but they run out of food. And Jacob said, "You're going to have to go back down there to Egypt and get some more grain." He said, "We can't go back down there to Egypt unless we take Benjamin." Because that leader down there told us, don't come back unless you bring back that youngest son to prove to me that you're not just spies. And Jacob said, we can't take Benjamin. If something were to happen to Benjamin, I'd die. He said, well, we've got to take Benjamin. And so they take Benjamin and they go down. And the homecoming they get down there is a little bit different this time. This time Joseph receives him. Joseph still hadn't told him who he is, of course. And he's talking through an interpreter, so they don't get to hear his voice or anything. But he receives them pretty well. When they first get down there, they said, you know, last time we were here, the silver got returned, and here it is all back. We didn't mean to take it. And Joseph receives them. He brings Simeon out. He gives them. He sees Benjamin as his brother. He still doesn't tell him who he is. But he receives them very well. But then he sends them back. And this time, he sends them back, and he again puts the silver back with them. But he does even more. He puts a silver cup in Benjamin's bag. And then he sends his men out to catch them on the way. And when he catches them, he says, you know, if I find out y'all stole that silver, you know, you're going to have to pay for it. But not only that, but my great silver cup is missing now. If I find who's taken that silver cup, they're going to be my slave. Of course, they go through their bags and they find it's in Benjamin. And now the brothers, they're really beside themselves. And I want you to listen to what Judah has to say. At this time, Judah's become sort of the leader. Reuben sort of taken a back seat, and Simeon, of course, was in prison. Judah, the fourth son, has become the leader. And listen what Judah says to Joseph when he thinks now that they're going to make Benjamin into a slave. This is chapter 44, verse 18. When Judah went up to him and he said, please, my lord, let your servant speak a word to my lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. May the Lord ask his servant, do you have a father or a brother? And we answered, we have an aged father, and there's a young son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead, and he is the only one of his mother's son left, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me so that I can see him for myself. And we said to my lord, the boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, his father will die. But you told your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my lord had said. Then our father said, go back, buy a little more food. But we said, we cannot go down. Only if your youngest brother is with us can we go. We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went from me, and I said, he has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. If you take this one too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray hair down to the grave in misery. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father's whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servant will bring the gray head of my father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's life to my father. I said, if I did not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Look at verse 33. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? Now think back at the beginning of the story. They sell their own brother into slavery. Now Judah is saying, I'm willing to take my brother's place and be a slave in his place. How did God pick those 10 men that sold their brothers into slavery? It wasn't the same 10 men now. You can see the hand of God working through their lives. They weren't the same men now. Now Judah's willing to take the place of his brother and become a slave. God had moved in their lives and had changed them. And that's where the providence of God works within us. As we read in Philippians 2:12, God works within us to make us what we can be. Now these men were different men than the men they had been 13 years before. And we see that working in the hand of God. We see it in Joseph's life. But Joseph's life wasn't an easy life. As I said, it was 13 years by the time he was sold into slavery to become governor. And during those times, his own brothers, their lives had changed them as well. And that's what the hand of God is with us. It changes us. We're not the same as when we start our walk with God. Let me look with you with three more scriptures as we end our lesson today. Romans 8:28. It says that we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. Now, I'm not saying that all things are good. We can see in Joseph's life, many bad things happened to Joseph. Being in prison for a number of years is not exactly a good thing. But it says God can work in all the things that happen to us to make us what we ought to be. And that's the same thing that Paul says back in Romans chapter 5. It says, we rejoice in our suffering. It's kind of a hard thing to do, isn't it? To rejoice when things go bad. Because we know that suffering produces perseverance. And perseverance, character. If there's one thing you see in Joseph's life, it's character. You see the kind of man that he was. Even though all these things that happened to him weren't so good, he was accused of many things that were false. He was then thrown into prison. But we see his character. It says, these things produce character, and character produces hope. And hope does not disappoint us, because God has poured out his love into our hearts by the Holy Spirit, whom he has given us. And James chapter 1 says much the same thing. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of any kind, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. And perseverance must finish its work so that you can be mature and complete, not lacking anything. That's the way God brings us about. And his hand is with us. He makes us into the kind of people that we can be. Doesn't mean we start that way with him. And we work with him. If we're in harmony with his will, Paul says, work out your salvation, but know that God works within you to make you into the kind of people that you should be. Today, think about the providence of God in your life. All of us face trials. We face things in our lives that things don't go so well for us. But know that God can use these things to make us in the kind of people that we can be. He can build our character. He can build our perseverance so that we can truly be faithful servants to our Lord and our God. Think about your life today. Have you started your walk with the Lord? To start your walk with the Lord, you're baptized into his death. And just like Christ was rose from the dead, you arise as a newborn creature so that God can start his walk in your life as you walk hand in hand with your will, if you walk harmony with his will. Well, if you started that walk and you haven't been faithful to him, why not come back to him today? If you need to come in any way, won't you come as together we stand and sing?